Football League. NBC Update, Guy LeBeau.
Imus in the morning.
Actually, they're too cheap to get an Imus in the evening jingle. Well, I'm Imus in the evening. I'm honored at 73 with Norman Knight. Oh, Norman Knight got a book coming out on rock in the 50s. And the early 60s, isn't it?
Yeah, and I must say at this point, that Dick Clark, I talked to him several weeks ago, and he's going to write the foreword to the book and endorse it, because I had a chance to sit and talk to him, and he saw how complete it was on the information. He was very much surprised, so he said he'd like to endorse it for me. So.
Well, the biggest trouble we have when we decided to do the interview with Norm was to decide what artists to use, artists that Norm had interviews with, because he's got interviews with them all. And we decided on some of my favorites. I'm Fast Domino, a little Richard Chuck Berry freak, and love Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. How'd you get interested in all of this, Norm? Is it,
it goes back to 1952, because at that time when Alan Freed started in Cleveland, where I'm from, I used
You're
to
from Cleveland?
Originally, all right. I used to hang around the radio stations and just get into the music and listen to Alan on the radio, and became a friend and just really got interested in the music at that point. And I think that's where my basic beginning started. And I had a chance to meet many of these artists passing through Cleveland that were coming through on those early rock and roll tours. And the music interested me. I started collecting the records, and that's how it started.
How many rock and roll records do you have in your own personal collection?
I have never gone for, like, a collector. I think I've only got maybe about 4,000 or 5,000 records compared to some of my friends that have 15, 20, 30,000. My thing has been collecting interviews and information.
So. Well, how about the one with Little Richard? Should we listen to that? It's Norman Knight and Little Richard talking about Tutti Frutti, isn't it?
How the song that launched his career came about, and also who really influenced him in popular music.
Okay.
Well, it was more religious type music. I used to, it was a popular singer at the time, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. I'm sure you heard of her. And a gospel black singer by the name of Brother Joe May, along with Mahalia Jackson, and the Clara Ward singers, also the gospel Hermanettes. And there was a singer at the time, a blues singer by the name of Ruth Brown, Laverne Baker, that was quite popular. And I felt very impressed by Lloyd Price and Fats Domino. So I decided that I would just keep on. And in working at the Greyhound bus station, washing dishes there, I used to make up the songs on my break periods. And I just kept on singing from church to church, and the reaction from the people was fantastic. And so one day Lloyd Price came to the Macon City Auditorium to do a concert, and I got a chance to talk to him. He had a black and gold Cadillac, and the Cadillac was so different to it, it fascinated me. Not that I wanted a Cadillac. I don't care that much for Cadillacs for my own person. I don't mind riding them, but it's nothing exciting. But I got a chance to talk to him, and talking about his Cadillac, he talked to a man by the name of Arthur Root, which his real name is Arthur Goldsboro, that runs Specialty Records, the president, by me recording for them. I sent a tape to them, and it took 1 year for them to get back in touch with me. So they had Bumps Blackwell, which was the A&R man for Specialty Records, to meet me at the Cosmo Studio in New Orleans. And there where it all begun, with Tutti Frutti in New Orleans when I first record the record there.
Womp, bomb, loom, bomb, lomp, bomb, bomb, tootie, boot, oh, who?
Ah!
bum, bum, bum. Got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. Got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. She knows how to love me, yes, indeed. Boy, you don't know what she do to me.
Yes, Little Richard and Tutti Frutti. We're here with Norma and Knight. Norma and Knight's got this book coming out next fall. And anything you ever wanted to know about anybody that had a hit record from 1950 through 1963, plus pictures of them and stuff, will be in that book. And we just listened to Norm interview Little Richard. Norm, Pat Boone, who I can't stand. Can't stand him. He's a nice man, got a nice family, but I don't like his records. Started out by doing what they call cover records, didn't he? What is exactly a cover record?
A cover record, at the time when these records were popular, like Little Richard and many of them, were done by rhythm and blues or black artists. Major record companies went and got their own artists to re-record the song.
White artists, hunkies.
Right.
Got them hunkies to do them, yeah.
Spent a lot of money behind them, and they had the hits.
Mm-hmm.
So Pat Boone did that with a lot of the artists' songs as well, Little Richard's and Fats Domino's.
How did Fats Domino feel about that?
Well, he didn't mind so much in some degree because he collected a lot of royalties from the publishing. He wrote many of those songs.
Yeah.
So he was collecting money two ways.
Let's listen to Norm and Knight talk to Fats Domino.
Well, first of all, we had old piano around the house. Then I used to work on an ice truck, too. And everywhere I went to deliver ice, when he had a piano, sometimes he used to leave me there. Unfortunately, the man I was working for was blind. See, me and his son used to work. And he used to drop me at the house. And he used to go, and the man, he used to go in one house, and I used to go to another one, and his dad used to be on the trucks waiting. And he'd go to the next house and make a delivery, and he'd say, "What's Fat at?" And his daddy knew I liked the piano, see? He said, "Well, that house where Fat went in, did he have a piano there?" His son said, "I don't know, I think so." He said, "Well, that's where he at. Go get him."
Now, as you began playing professionally in New Orleans at various clubs, how did you happen to meet Dave Bartholomew, the man who later helped you co-write so many of your hits?
Well, I was playing at a place in New Orleans called a Hideaway Nightclub. I started there in 1947. And 2 years later, a fellow from Imperial Record Company, Lou Chud, was in New Orleans looking for talent, and they didn't heard about me singing a lot of different songs. And they came in one night, him and Dave and another fellow by the name of Al Young. And somebody had mentioned my name, so they came in and they heard me. And they asked me, "Could I sing?" I said, "I haven't been singing." He said, "Could you try? Or do you think you sing?" So he said, "Well, I'll try." Well, I was doing a few numbers, but not too many. And after I'd done those couple of numbers, he said, "Do you think you can record?" I said, "I don't know. Can you write?" I said, "No, I can try." So me and Dave got together and we wrote The Fat Man together in 1949.
That first song that you had for Imperial, your first big hit called The Fat Man, was this the song that caused you to get the nickname The Fat Man?
Well, I was playing with another band, local band, and I was weighing about 140 when I started with him, and I started picking up weight. So he said, "Well, I'm going to call you Fatso." So he started calling me Fats, and I'm up to 165. So everybody know me from New Orleans during that time, from Fats Domino. So when I made my record, and I named it The Fat Man.
How did the song Ain't It a Shame come about, that you got the idea for it?
Well, you know, I used to write all my songs from the idea of what I hear people say, the thing that they say every day, the common thing, like if somebody do something, you might hear them say, "That's a shame the way it's happened," or "The shame the way they did this and that," or "Beat a little baby," or anything like that. And I got the idea from that.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. And you said we'll part. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. cry. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You wasn't to blame. Oh well, goodbye. Although I'll cry. Ain't that a shame?
Oh, yeah. One of the fathers of rock and roll. Fats Domino.
Oh, well, that just gets you ready, won't it?
We're here with Norman Knight. And Norman Knight, that's Norman Knight's theme song in the background, The Night Train. We'll be back with Norman Knight. And we'll be talking about more great rock and roll artists from the 50s and early 60s. We're going to have an interview here with, Bo Diddley. Yeah, and we're going to be talking about Chuck Berry and Conway Twitty. And, it's going to hurt you.
With No Man Night. If you can tell me the lead singer's name of this group, call me right now, area code 212, circle 78300 in New York City. Blues, doo-wop hits all time. Is that a doo-wop hit, Norm?
That's right.
In the Still of the Night. Norm, who was the lead singer?
Freddie Paris.
Where was he from?
New Haven, Connecticut.
See what I mean? There ain't nothing No Man Night don't know about rock and roll. Norman Knight is my special guest on Imus on Monder in the evening on NBC 73. Norman and I worked together on the same radio station in Cleveland, and now we both came to New York, except Norm's on CBS and I'm on NBC. And Norm's doing all right. Got the number one show here on Sunday night called Norman Knight and a Norman Knight Night Train. And we're talking about Norm's book, but most importantly, we're talking about my book won't be out till next fall. I'll have you on again, Norm, and we plugged the book, you know what I mean? They didn't want me to plug the book because me and Norm got the same publisher. See, my book going to be out pretty soon, too. So my book's a novel. It's a life story of Reverend Hargis. Anyway, Norm, is there anything that you don't... Let me ask you a couple of questions about rock and roll stars and see if you know the answers. Now, we have not rehearsed this, have we, Norm? What's Fats Domino's real name?
Antoine.
Okay. Who was the lead singer for the Penguins when they recorded Earth Angel?
Cleve Duncan, along with Dexter Tisby, Curtis Williams, and Bruce Tate.
Who had a big hit on their own on RCA and got killed, but also started out with the Penguins or sang with them?
You talking about Jesse Belvin?
See, I told you nothing Norm doesn't know. what we're doing this hour is we're talking about, we've been talking about some of the fathers of rock and roll, and the fathers of rock and roll would be guys like
The people that we had, right now that we were talking about, Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Bill Haley, Little Richard, Elvis Presley, these were the real guys that started it off in 1955, the giants of rock and roll. Then the rest of them kind of rallied around.
Uh-huh. Well, Alan Freed, who was a disc jockey in Cleveland and came to New York, originated the phrase rock and roll in about 30 seconds, because we got another interview I want to play that you did. How did that phrase rock and roll with Alan Freed come about?
He was looking for a classification of the music. At the time, it was called Race Records, and didn't want to use that on the air. And he heard a lot of the songs that had phrases rock 'em and roll 'em and whatever. And for a lack of another term, he just said, this music makes you rock and roll, and he just classified that as the music. And this happened in Cleveland in 1952, and ever since then, that's what the music's been known as.
I'll be doing. He could have made a whole lot of money if he'd made that a trademark or something, couldn't he? That's how I'm motivated, ladies and gentlemen, is by how much money someone could have made doing something. Norm, you're going to make a lot of money on this book, because there's a lot of people want to know things about, well, like Bo Diddley and stuff. You got an interview with Bo Diddley. Why don't you introduce it for us?
All right. This time, Bo talks about how the influence he started got interested in music himself, and how his song Bo Diddley first came about.
You know, a kid has everything he see he want. Well, I was one of those. I picked it out of a catalog. My sister gave it to me for Christmas present, and my mother didn't dig it, you know, because I was playing violin, and she said, well, you know, this I see trouble on the way, you know. You know how mothers are, you know. But she was a beautiful person, but she just didn't understand that I had a mind of my own, and I think I was beginning to develop what I wanted to try to do. But I still didn't have no intentions of becoming a guitar player.
When you were starting to play as a guitar player, who was probably the most influential person in your career that you really dug when you were learning?
John Lee Hooker. Because every time I see John, I tell him, and I said, hey, man, he just says, you caused me being in this mess I'm in today. You know, and he looked at me and laughed and said, what you mean? You know, I tell him, I say, when I heard your record, Boogie Chillin', I was a little kid. I said, I told my sister and all of them, my mother and all of them, and my friends, I said, if you could play guitar, I could. And at that time, this cat was playing, and I declare, I didn't understand what was happening. I just thought he was banging. But this man has really got a thing going. And he is playing his instrument, and he's playing it, and there ain't nobody else out here like him that comes anywhere close to John Lee Hooker is doing what he's doing. He's got it all by himself, and he's got it sold up tight.
Okay, now you have the guitar player. How'd you get that first recording contract?
With Chess Records. I went in there, and I played Bo Diddley for him, and it wasn't called Bo Diddley then, and it was called Uncle John. And they told me to go back and write it over because the words was too heavy, you know. So I went back and cleaned the thing up, you know, and brought it back. And they said, well, let's cut it, you know. And it took me, I think I took 35 takes. Of Bo Diddley before I got it right. To sound halfway decent.
So listen to the size, baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye. If that private eye can't see, he better take the ring from me. Oh, dear, they call her Nanny Gold to make a pretty baby of Sunday cold. Oh, dear, they call her Bellcat to make a pretty baby of Sunday hat. We'll be right back. come to my house with black cat bones. Take my baby away from home. Mother, that photo, where'd he been? Up to your house and gone again. Oh, diddly, have you heard? My pretty baby said she was a bird.
Bo Diddley, preceded by Norman Knight, my special guest on I'm Mr. Nemi, and I'm honored to talk with Bo Diddley. I'm Mr. Nemi, and we are right on. Out of the beat.
World NBC Update.
IMS in the morning.
Hank Ballard and the Midnighters and Annie Had a Baby. My special guest is Norman Knight, and the reason we play a little bit of that record, Norm, when I was in high school, was banned from all the radio stations.
In 1954, those songs came out with what you would call Annie songs. First was Work With Me, Annie, then Sexy Ways, Annie Had a Baby, and they were very suggestive lyrics.
Yeah.
Hank Ballard wrote them, and a lot of stations banned them.
Annie Had a Baby is pretty plain. I mean, it's pretty plain what happened behind doing the backseat boogie or whatever it was they was doing.
But I just want to say one thing about Hank Ballard. It should be noted that he's the guy who originally wrote The Twist, which Chubby Checker had the hit of in 1960.
The song The Twist? Come on, baby.
He wrote it in 1958 and had the original hit on it, and Chubby copied it note for note.
Mm-hmm. Norm, we've been talking about your book. Because I know a lot of people are a lot of disc jockeys around the country. We have a lot of wimp disc jockeys that listen to this show, and they listen to Robert W. Morgan's on, we call this a Super Jock series on Monitor. And Wolfman Jack's on, and them little wimps out there sitting out there trying to copy us and stuff, and now they'd be trying to copy you. But if they, your book would be something good for a disc jockey to have, wouldn't it? I mean, when it comes out.
I think any person, whether they're on the air or whether they're just a fan, if they had the book, there's never anything they'd ever need to know about popular music. And I mean it quite honestly, because everything is in it. All the discographies and the pictures would blow their minds just looking at the pictures. But
I would rather you didn't use any drug phrases on this on the air, Norm. I'll blow your mind.
The information they'd like to know about any of these artists is all in it.
Good, that'll be good. We expect it'll be out sometime in the fall, so you don't even know.
Or sooner.
Well, we hope sooner, yes. But that's good. Norris, you've been working on it a long time, haven't you? Well, ever since you started, I guess.
Well, actually, the basic research began about 20 years ago. I never knew I was going to put it into a book.
Yeah.
But it was about 2-3 years ago that I started formulating all the information from these interviews into a book. But I've had a chance, luckily, to interview thousands of entertainers over the years and got their stories and put it down in paper form.
We've had a lot of talk now with the Supreme Court and some of them other commies talking about lyrics from popular songs. Why were so many lyrics from the 50s rock songs banned and censored at that time?
Well, a lot of the lyrics at that time were banned because, they had the double meaning, and a lot of the things that they were doing, the songs that they were recording at that time, people, it was a crude time of the year for as far as songs or what have you, but I think the songs that they're recording today, the lyrics are much heavier, but the people are accepting it more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to you and Chuck Berry talk about it, okay?
Okay.
In a sense, Muddy directed me to the first and only business appointment that I've had, that I had in the initiation of my career, and that was to chess. At least he told me where it was, the possibilities of being recognized, or given a chance to show the material that I had. And so, in following his advice or his request, I did secure a contract from Chess, what with bringing the band back and so forth from St. Louis to Chicago. And we recorded, and some months later, as I didn't know how the business end of it turned out then, a contract was signed and a center record and so forth. And we moved on into a very close relation because the first record was a hit, being Maybelline. And from there on, we had folded along into other popular improvisations. And then I suppose the recognition was quite apparent.
Now, it all started with a song called Maybelline in 1955. I believe the original name of that song, was it called Ida Red?
Yeah, we sang it naming Maybelline Ida Red. And then when we did it commercially, I say commercially, when we did it in the studio, we decided to name it something peculiar. And that was the name of a cow in a third grade ditty. Maybelline was the name of the cow. So no offense, however, to any Maybellines that are around, but then that's why it got its name.
Maybelline, why can't you be true?
My favorite Chuck Berry record, Maybelline. Why can't you be true? I'm here with Norman Knight of the Knight Trading. We're talking about Norman's book. We're talking about rock and roll. We're talking about all of our favorite artists and stuff. Aside from Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Fast Domino, and of course my personal favorite is Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, who of all of the artists is your personal favorite, Norm? I know you know all of them personally, so you don't want to offend any of them, but what was your favorite all-time rock and roll record? Let's put it that way.
Wow, I should really have thought about that one, because I have so many. I would say probably the two songs I like has been G by the Crows and Earth Angel by the Penguins.
Yeah, those two are mine, too. I like Speedo by the Cadillacs. Remember that one?
Oh. I don't call me Speedo, but my real name is Mr.
Elvis had, of course, a big influence in rock and roll, and remember when Conway Twitty and a guy named Raoul Donner both put out records, and Raoul Donner is washing cars some way, but Conway has gone on to become a tremendous country artist, but a lot of people thought they were Elvis, and their start of their career is kind of based on Elvis, aren't they?
They certainly did. In fact, give you an example right now with Conway Twitty. He tells about how his name first came about.
I was born in Mississippi, Friars Point, Mississippi, about 70 miles south of Memphis, right on the Mississippi River. And when I was 10 years old, I moved up the Mississippi River about 10 miles and across it into Arkansas, a town called Helena, Arkansas. And that's where I grew up there.
Okay. At this time when you were born, your real name, I believe, was Harold Jenkins. Now, the age-old question from so many people is, how and why did you choose the name Conway Twitty?
Well, when I first got into the business, I felt that this was back in the 50s when rock was first starting. And of course, that was what I was getting into. And we felt like that the disc jockeys got so many new record releases every week and every day almost that we needed an unusual name to catch their attention. And maybe if they came upon an unusual name, they might put it on the turntable. And of course, after they do that, you're on your own. But that's why and how we came up with Conway Twitty. I got it off of the map of the United States. It's Conway, Arkansas, and Twitty, Texas.
People see us everywhere. They think you really care, but myself I can't deceive.
Oh, my prayers, my hopes, and my schemes. You are my every dream, but it's only made believe.
Conway Twitty, it's only make believe. We've had Norman Knight. Oh, the Norman Knight Night Train on. I'm in the evening on monitor. Norm, thanks for coming by.
I want to thank you so much, Don, for having me. It really has been a pleasure.
We'll look for your book in the fall, and understand maybe you have your own special on monitor. Do three. How about Norman Knight in 3 hours, nothing but oldies but goodies, and interviews talking about him. Right on. We'll do that. We'll be back in a minute, but I'm on monitor. Norm, thanks again. We'll talk to Paul Anka in Las Vegas. Hope you can get him to stand on a milk box so he can reach the phone. We'll be back in a minute.